Wait for it. Wait for it. Welcome to the BerlinBrigade.com podcast with your host, David Guerra.
Hallo, ich bin der andere Ami, David Guerra, und willkommen auf der 38. Folge der BerlinBrigade.com Podcast. As I said, hello, I am David Guerra, and welcome to the 38th episode of the BerlinBrigade.com Podcast. I am also a former member of Alpha Company, 6th Battalion, 502nd Infantry, Berlin Brigade, United States Army, and I thank you for taking the time to join me today on this, the greatest podcast exclusively dedicated to all the men and women that ever served in and supported the mission of the United States Army's most illustrious and most prestigious unit, the Berlin Brigade and the Berlin Command. I hope everyone is having a wonderful, happy, and safe spring 2012, and how are your allergies holding out? But hey, listen, without any further delay, and before the Claritin kicks in, Los Gates mit diesen Podcast.
It's time for the special announcements!
I know, I said that I would make this episode exclusively the interview episode podcast, but, I missed two important announcements last month, and I need to get them in here because I said I would. So, from the BerlinBrigade.com email hopper, first, I want to apologize to Bob Hazel for not including his email, but here it is now, and I quote from his email. FYI, upon arriving for Berlin duty in October of 1967, the EMs and NCOs, the enlisted members, and the non-commissioned officers assigned to greet at the RTO were all talking about a young GI who was killed during bayonet drill either that day or a few days before. Has he ever been identified, and was there a story attached? Thanks, Bob Hazel, unquote. I have not heard of this, but over the years, you pick up rumors, you hear little things here and there, and I know that there was some mention about, was something happened in training, but not that it was an actual bayonet drill. So, if anyone is aware of this incident around 1967, or of who the young GI was that Bob mentions, please do not hesitate to contact me, dave@berlinbrigade.com, so we can recognize the individual and give him our proper respects. So again, dave@berlinbrigade.com, if you know who Bob Hazel is talking about in the story that he mentions here about the young GI who was killed during bayonet drill training. Our second email comes from Richard Reese, and I quote, "Just wondering if you know anyone still left from Berlin Brigade on active duty." He writes, "I had no breaks in service since leaving Berlin in June of 1993 and served in Berlin from 88 to 93, unquote. Well, that's a fantastic question, Richard. If you, and you, the listener, are a former member of the Berlin Brigade and you're still on active duty, we want to hear from you. And, I mean it. We really want to hear from you. I know that there are at least one or two of you out there. And this, again, from picking up over the years, I know there was one about a year or two ago who was being deployed to Iraq, but we've lost track of him, but he's out there. So, again, if it's you, let us know. I know there's also a one-star who was in Berlin, and he was a platoon leader, and I mentioned him a couple of podcasts ago, so I know of one. And as for the rest, well, over the years, you know, you pick up some rumblings, but nothing substantial. So this question by Richard, who also happens to be a recruiting station commander out of Fort Meade, Maryland, and assigned to the Charleston, West Virginia Medical Recruiting Station. So if you're in that area in Charleston, West Virginia, drop by and tell them, hey, Berlin Brigade sent you, but, it's up to you if you want to sign up. So again, if you were once assigned to the Berlin Brigade and you're still on active duty, please let us know. You can drop me a note at dave@berlinbrigade.com, and that way we can also recognize you and what you're continuing to do and the service you continue to do for the nation and in the spirit of the Berlin Brigade. You're still there, and that's a good thing. Well, listen, that's it for the emails that I overlooked. Thanks, everyone, that sent in. Again, my apologies to those that I didn't include this time. But, hey, the next episode, we've already got plenty, and we have room for plenty more. So if you have a question, a comment, a concern, drop me an email. It'll get on there. We'll talk about it, and we'll get some answers.
Take your seats, because it's time for the special guest interview.
Hey, everybody. Joining me today is Darren Taylor. He was assigned to 2nd Platoon, Alpha Company, 6th Battalion, 502nd Infantry, Berlin Brigade from October of 1985 to October of 1987. Darren, thanks for joining us. Thank you.
Thanks, Dave.
Hey, glad you could take some time. We've been talking, and for those of you that heard the introduction and kind of, wait a minute, didn't I just hear that at the beginning of the show? You certainly did. Alpha Company, 6th Battalion, 502nd Infantry. We were there. Darren got there a month before I got there, and Darren left a month before I left. But, you know, old friend, one of my oldest Berlin buddies. Darren, again, we've been talking about it off the interview block here, and we've been online and on Facebook and chatting back and forth, but finally we got some time, and here we are. We're talking, and we're reminiscing, and we're having a good time. Again, Darren, thanks for joining us. Hey, where am I calling today?
Right now, I'm in Vancouver, Washington at my office.
Sweet. All the way in the let me guess, it's rainy, it's foggy, and it's kind of cool.
Today, it's actually just cloudy.
Oh, well, that was close.
That's kind of nice.
But it was cool, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a little bit cool. We've had maybe 2 days of 80-degree weather this year thus far.
Wow. Folks, we are recording, let's see, what is today's date? June something. June 24th. It's a Friday afternoon. Listen, tell you what, Darren, like I said, you got there in October of 85, but why don't you tell us about what you did to get to Berlin?
Really easy. Join the Army. went through basic, was contracted for Europe, went to Ramstein, checked in, and they gave me a choice of duty stations, and being that I didn't know a whole lot, I had a family friend who was stationed in Berlin with the Air Force, so when they brought up Berlin, I jumped on it. I had no idea what I was getting into. And have no regrets at all.
Wow, pretty cool. Pretty cool. So you're one of those lucky ones to get to go to the 21st AG replacement?
I think that's what it was. It was a blur. It was me and Dan Braun, who was in your platoon, and a couple other guys who went through boot. We all volunteered to go to Berlin. We had our choices. They gave us two or three options, and for me, it was blind luck. It was the only city I really knew, had any idea of what it was. And then I said yes, and they took it from there. They found a sucker.
Well, pretty cool. Pretty cool. Well, yeah, no, definitely it's a good thing, and especially when you get a choice. So that's even better. Let's see. Well, let's press on. Okay, so you where did you go? You went to, well, obviously, infantry. You went to Fort Benning. Were you on Sand Hill or Harmony Church? Where were you?
Well, I'm definitely a church boy. World War II, old barracks, walked in the wind. Bravo 10-2, Vanguard to victory. Amazing what terms you still remember. Went through Harmony Church in the heat of summer. Processed out, got to go home for about a week, and then off to St. Louis on travel orders, straight over to European Command, straight to Berlin.
Yeah, wow.
I think I spent maybe a whole 24 hours at the replacement depot, and off I went. Put us on a night train and straight through from Frankfurt through the east-west corridor, checkpoint Alpha and Bravo. Had our flag orders and got off the train that morning and was straight over to processing.
And that was a blur.
That was a big blur. I remember getting off the bus and at McNair, aka the zoo, and I can't remember if I had to check in somewhere there or we already had orders for what that company were going to be in. I don't remember too many stops in between.
Wow.
Next thing I know, I was in Alpha 6 to 502nd.
Yeah, great. That was home. That was home. Well, let's see. You earlier we were talking, and you reminded me about something, and I know we didn't even talk about it, but, you know, let's talk a little bit. You were with the drill team there for a while?
For a little while, I was with the drill team. I went and tried out. having been done a lot of that kind of stuff in high school, went and tried out, was picked up immediately for the team, and off to 5th Battalion. I went briefly while they were at McNair, and then we were transferred over to Andrews Barracks. And we were lucky enough and unfortunate enough to be, our barracks area was right above the MPs. So that was fun. But we went over, took over. We had, I think they gave us an entire 3 days to make the entire floor livable, and it had not been occupied since 1971 or 73, somewhere in that area. So we had a good 15 years of crud to clean up. But we got it done, and then we all moved in there and went from having 4 to 6 guys in a small room to 2-man rooms, so it was kind of nice. And my time on the team was somewhat brief. And then back to 6th Battalion I went. I remember the drill day being starting out different than what it was at McNair. We did our PT in the afternoon versus the morning. And I'd have to say probably one of my hardest jobs in the Army was being on drill team, just due to the fact that uniforms had to be kept at top level at all times, along with boots, uniform, and then the weapons drill, learning all the silent routine, how to spin a rifle with bayonet. And I just remember that as being a time I wish would last a little bit longer, but it was one of those things where don't get caught with beer in your wall locker if you're on the drill team at the time. So it was me and a couple other guys were sent back to our unit.
Yeah, that's the price we pay for being young.
It truly was. I mean, I learned a lot. I would say my best memories of being in the military had everything to do with Berlin and the unit and everybody I served with. So that was something I would, if I was 18 all over again, whether it was a Berlin Brigade or not, I would be re-enlisting in the military. Something that all men and women should get a chance to experience.
Oh, yeah.
You'll never find the camaraderie of people in your life ever again.
Oh, most certainly. Most certainly. It's a unique experience. I mean, it doesn't matter if you were in Berlin or if you were in some line unit out in Fort Carson, Colorado. It's different. It's different. And those that would never served, sorry, but those that served, we understand. So yeah, I agree with you. It's something, I would do it in a heartbeat all over again. No doubt about it. But I would scratch, claw and fight to just build a brand new Berlin Brigade if I could, if things were different, but hey, things aren't, and that's a good thing. Let's press on then. Okay, well, you're back in 6th Battalion, and you're getting in the groove, and like all units, we all had stuff to do, and we kind of rotated around. We had the RTEPs, and we had parade season, which 20 somewhat odd years ago this week we'd be preparing for another parade. So that's kind of crazy. Think about it. But hey, there we are. We're here now, and that's over. But it's summertime, and then we move into other things. And one of the other things was Volksfest. Volksfest, 1986 Broadway in Berlin. And luckily, 6th Battalion played a big role during Volksfest of that year, and especially Alpha Company did. I know we did. So hey, why don't you tell us what you did kind of during Volksfest and give us a little, kind of insight on what you did going on, what was going on back then.
Well, I hate to say it, but a couple of those years do blend together, partly because of all the extracurricular activities that we had. But I do remember that year starting out in the Rib Shack, where our unit was cooking up some, if I remember right, both beef and pork ribs, and they were just wonderful. But the opportunity came up that they needed someone to work in the little casino that they'd set up. And I worked there off and on, making sure that American forces had to be at least 18 to go in and try their luck. And the rest of the time I spent kind of in the VIP area serving as a bartender for dignitaries. And so one of the biggest things I remember, because Sam Adams was pretty much a new beer at the time, at least for me it was, and I remember that stuck out definitely in my mind of serving a lot of those and drinking a few myself. But I remember just that was an entire time of the year that we were all blocked off. Everybody had something to do at Wilkesfest. That was our duty station during the time. And so I remember spending most of my duty time, all my duty time, and most of my off time right there at the Wilkesfest, especially the beer tents, and just taking in the culture and the both the citizens of Berlin and the armed forces all coming together and having a really good time. I visited some of the other Wilkesfest that within Berlin, and there was none like ours. It was a good time to open doors and basically have an open house where people who would normally not meet military in Berlin got a chance to be a little bit exposed to us, service members, and to what we were doing. It was a good time that everybody came together and just had a wonderful time.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I remember heading over to the French-German Volksfest, and yeah, it had certainly its own unique feel to it, and it wasn't anything like what we put on, that's for sure. I mean, a lot of the rides and stuff was there, but again, it's just the atmosphere. And again, that might be what definitely, well, it was what set us apart, and that's a good thing. And again, not saying anything bad against our French counterparts or anything, but hey, you know, that's just the way we were. That's how we rolled, I guess.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, plus that was our home turf. We had everything right there for us that we would need. And when you're, you know, when you're an integral part of what's going on, you tend to have a little bit better time versus being someone who's just coming to visit. So it was, I think we put on a better Volksfest, but, you know, I'm biased.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, we did. No. And yeah, you know what? Two of us are biased, and it's a law and it's a rule and it's set in stone. So yeah, we did. We put on a better one. Alrighty, well, yeah, no, let's move on from, let's move away from August of 86, and let's move forward to April of 1987. And April up until August of 87 was the month that the U.S. forces pulled Spandau guard duty. And Darren, you played a role in the changeover from the Soviet to the U.S. month. So if you don't mind, go ahead and fill us in on what you did, how you did it, prepped, and just thoughts about when it was actually taking place.
Well, you know, the thing I remember a lot for that, it was, First Platoon was signed as the honor guard for that. And having been on drill team and being 6 foot tall, it made me a prime candidate to be attached to 1st Platoon during that time. And we did, I couldn't tell you how many countless hours we did of drill and ceremonies to make sure that we were picture perfect, which was, you know, what we did very well. And kind of, you know, reflects in with parade season. And so I remember the doing formation, shining boots, brass, you know, re-cleaning and bleaching the white pistol belts we had and our helmet liners and getting those all, making those as picture perfect as anybody could. I think we did a good job. To include painting, I remember us being out there in a courtyard at one time painting the bayonet sheath white, if I remember correct, even for that. And then the actual going up there and doing the honor guard, I remember us showing up at the American barracks, storing our equipment, and we were going to be the first group that was going to rotate through for that month. And if I remember right, I think I was there the whole time. I think I had 3 days that I wasn't out there actually doing guard duty. And that was a different experience in itself. But I remember, you know, big information, walking up, walking through those gates, and having the Soviet troops, and at the time they were not allies, they were our sworn enemy. It was during the peak of the Cold War. And I remember us walking in perfect formation, you know, making that precise drill, making that left face and staring right down to the faces of the Soviet group over there with their hammer and sickles. And I remember our formation, as we were standing there, I remember our formation started leaning a little bit forward and staring down our sworn enemies across there. And we were actually able to make them break formation. We had them looking in trees. We had them looking at the ground, anywhere but across from us. So I guess that was a minor victory during the Cold War, at least for us it was, that we were able to take the Soviet Union and make them break ranks a little bit. That's one of my big memories of the changeover. And then we took possession of the prison. And we each, one of the squads was marched out immediately and took over all the guard stations. And so I remember being there for almost the whole time. I wish I could remember how many hours on and off we had. It seemed like it was, you know, three on, three off. But I couldn't tell you. I remember we switched guard towers frequently. Having a splendid view of the entire prison facility. And when while I was out there in the wonderful Tower 3, the haunted one, you know, sounds crazy, but I did hear someone trying to walk up the steps while I was there. It made me want to stand on the hatch a lot heavier. But I did have the opportunity once to see Rudolf Hess march by when he was going out to his enclosed viewing area outside, the birdcage. I have no idea what the real name of it was, but we just called it the birdcage. And, you know, I wouldn't say it was a respect thing, but there was some awe there because the gentleman was about 93 years old, and he still walked with his head high. You see, there was a lot of pride in that man. And it almost appeared, and it could be just in my own mind's eye, that he was still attempting the goose march, do the goose step. It just seemed that he's someone that when you looked at, it was almost looking into the face of evil. And it was a definite moment in time that, you know, one remembers, that you just don't forget the look of this man and the way he was. And I remember, you know, being out there switching day and night, being up in the towers, making sure we're being checked in constantly. Searchlights. I know it sounds bad, but I remember one of the things we would do from one of the towers, I want to say it was 4 or 5, was shine a searchlight into the floor that we suspected he was in, try to keep him awake all night. But that was kind of a youth, I would say. But I remember being out there for a long time, being able to come back for a couple of days, do laundry. But it was definitely an experience that few people, even in Berlin, got to share. And it's something that I keep a photo of the changeover on my wall with us, with the Soviets. It's actually in a frame. And that's one of the things that I definitely remember of that, the whole process. I remember us being out there for a full month. And the duty that it entailed, and you did a lot of uniform prep. We did a lot of, we even were able to fit PT in between shifts. And that was one of those duty stations where you were briefly there and you were locked in. There was no leaving. You had to stay with your squad. You could maybe go to the British PX for some snacks or something, but you always went as a squad. That was one of the times that there was, you know, you were in a big bunkhouse, full room, and you slept whenever you could sleep and got uniform prepped, and that was the priority. Get the uniform ready for the next shift, and then you can get some sleep. I remember putting a lot of time in the guardhouses. And off the record, I still have a few mementos from there. I actually brought home a brick from the prison and one of the old really big insulators from, I think, was the electric fence at one time. And I have those stashed away in my private collection, to include a few other things that I may have brought back with me. I think statute of limitations are up, but I still have the bore cleaning brush from my 90mm cordless rifle and a map that somehow ended up in my equipment for Doughboy City. So, one of those things. We each have our own mementos.
And oh, yeah.
I still have a box of photos someplace that I look through every once in a great while and see pictures of Phil Anstein playing baseball and got pictures of a couple of the other guys just hanging out in the barracks and us doing some crazy stuff that we probably shouldn't have been doing.
I'm afraid that I'm just going to stick with the word liberate. I liberated a few things as well during our time there in the British sector, and we creatively acquired. And, it was definitely one of those times that, I forgot all about that. But, yeah, we had to go as a group. We had to go as a squad or as the actual group. And I totally forgot about that. But, yeah, that was definitely one of those things that was unique about that event, was definitely moving from point A to point B as a group, even, where you're just used to, back at the barracks, you're just used to just going down to across the street and you're right there at the little PX and you're in and you're back.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I just remember that, it was, not something we made up at Spandau, because you could see them, you can see shadow and you can see movement, and that was, because each of the four nations that guarded that place had their own barracks, that was their barracks, and I remember constantly seeing and hearing movement in the Soviet barracks when we'd go by to relieve or come back from the prison itself. I mean, it was a short walk, we just walked around a corner, it was right outside the wall was where the prison was, where everybody was billeted at. But yeah, I just remember things like that that stick out that were, wow, we're constantly being watched. And that was one of the things in Berlin that we were so aware of, is that, you don't tell anybody, what you do in the military. You don't tell cab drivers, you don't tell civilians. I remember that one of the things we used to tell cab drivers when they'd ask, or even anybody, was, what do you do in the military? I'm a cook. And they usually stopped asking questions. It's a good way to get the conversation to quit. And I'm a cook. And they didn't ask too much more, but I do remember that the operational security was, even then, as we are in a heightened stage of awareness here in our country now, for us in Berlin, that was day-to-day. That was, I guess it could be considered stressful, but that's something we live with on a day-to-day basis is, be careful what you say and who you talk to. And it kind of falls back to the entire history of the city of Berlin, to include, all the way back to World War II, that, loose lips will sink ships. So that was one thing I remember sticking out very clearly in my mind for Berlin, and always be aware of your surroundings and be aware of who you're talking to, because you never know who you might be talking to and what kind of information they're trying to gather. Or if they're just being honestly inquisitive. But that was one thing that, I'll probably always remember, is that you just had to be very quiet and be very careful of what you say and what you do.
Oh, yeah. I think OPSEC, those posters were everywhere.
Yes, they were.
Yeah. Yep.
We're now leaving the American sector.
Yeah, that too. So, time comes and we got other stuff to do, and April eventually ended, and the changeover was with the Brits.
Yes, it was actually the Black Watch came in.
Oh, there we go.
I remember them coming in their kilts, and I have a Scottish heritage, but we were making fun of them in their skirts and their little beanie caps with the big red pom pom on the top. And I'm sure that they'd be offended by that, but one of the things I remember about that changeover. Because one, we're giving it over to a true ally, so a little bit more of a festive type thing for us. And it was the end, so we were all happy to be able to be packing up and leaving that day. But I remember when they marched in, when they did their we called it a stutter step. One of them fell and knocked down a couple of the other guys behind him, almost like dominoes. And they were wearing their kilts regimental. A lot more than we needed that day. But it was all put back together, and we did a quick changeover, and they took over the duties of guarding the prison. And I remember that off we went. We were able to pack up our gear, jump on the Deuce Vamps, and back across the city we went. And our time there as a unit was up. And then as it went, one of the other units would take over the rotation, and 3 or 4 months later. Still looking for the photo of that changeover. I don't have that one, but I'll find it eventually.
Well, there you go.
That was one of the things I remember, the Black Watch coming in and taking it over from us.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Now we've got something else. Aside from the key to the clock tower, we're now looking for the photo of the U.S.-British changeover from May 1st of 1987. Wow.
Well, isn't the key of the clock tower hanging up at the top of the clock tower?
Well, I couldn't get up there because the door was locked.
No, it was hanging up on the windowsill right by it. That's what...
Oh, rats. Never mind. Got to go back.
That's where I remember it being said it was. But, you know, I just remember that that was such a bizarre uniform that people would have to do. I never had to do clock tower watch, but I just remember being in Class A's and Mickey Mouse boots.
That is correct. That is correct. Standard.
Yeah, I think that was standard. They were in the dress uniform, Mickey Mouse boots, and they had to go line the clock, I believe.
Yeah, it had to do with the insulating properties of the boots, and that's why they had to be worn.
Exactly. So, yeah, I was lucky enough never being assigned, but I had performed CQ duty several times, both in our unit and at headquarters upstairs, where they had the Freedom Phone, where you can call home collect. And having it always seemed like it was the FNGs, the new guys, who were lucky enough to draw that prestigious duty to go up there and do that. And I remember those guys even then having a hard time trying to find that key. I couldn't remember where they stored it. Sometimes they put it over at 5th Battalion, but I don't know why. But I think it was just depends on who was in charge of the night before, who had to do duty doing the clock winding, because I think more than one battalion was that. I think that duty rotated quite a bit.
Yeah, that's my understanding as well. Well, hey, everybody, we're talking to Darren Taylor. He was assigned to 2nd Platoon, Alpha Company, 6th Battalion, 502nd Infantry, Berlin Brigade from October of 85 to October of 87. And we're just having a good old time here, just reminiscing about some awesome things that went on that we both got to experience at the same time. We were both in the same company, different platoons, but same company. And so we crossed paths many times, and we traveled down the same road and road marched the same side of the street and the whole nine yards. But hey, it was a lot of fun, and it's been awesome reminiscing. And we just finished talking about Volksfest of 86 and Spandau of April of 87. And you know what? All good things come to an end. And well, the time in Berlin came to an end, and for Darren and for me eventually. And Darren, where did you go after Berlin?
I was stationed at Fort Knox, Kentucky, the home of the Gold Vault. And we never got to see the gold, but I was stationed in the 4th of the 15th Infantry, and we were the sole infantry battalion on an entire tanker post. So if it wasn't tankers, it was MPs we had to deal with. But we spent a lot of time with the 194th Armored Brigade, that's where we were assigned, and we spent a lot of time in the field. Not only on post, and that's one thing I won't forget about Fort Knox is the grit of the red clay that would stick to everything and basically set up probably one hardness away from cement. So once it got on, you weren't getting it off. It would take pretty much a chisel. And I just remember all the vehicle maintenance trying to get that clay off of the vehicles. It was almost a pleasure to go out to Fort Irwin, California, to go out there because you're just dealing with sand, and that washed off pretty easy. But we spent a lot of time there. I remember we did a lot of time in the field, so I remember going down to Fort Campbell. I remember going out to Fort Bliss, Texas. I remember us going out to NTC out at Irwin. I don't remember how many times, and I seem to be lucky enough to be volunteered by my first sergeant to spend a lot of time in the field. They even sent a unit out. We went up to Canada for a little while to train with the Yukon someplace with the Canadians. All three of their army guys.
Gotcha. So when did you ETS?
I ETS'd in October of 1989. And I remember being quite hungover on my last day. And then I took the money and ran. I went back to Southern California, where I was originally raised, out in San Diego, and spent a number of years out there. Ended up going to my high school 10-year reunion, meeting a fabulous foreign exchange student from high school. We were both at our high school, and she was a foreign exchange student from Amsterdam. And did not know her in high school, knew of her, did not know her, and we met at our high school reunion, went on 3 dates and got married. Been married for almost 16 years now. We're on our 16th year.
Wow. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you. And one beautiful, very spirited, young Dutch girl. Well, 8-year-old, and believe it or not, they're going to be flying back to Amsterdam next week. Unfortunately, Dad has to work.
Yeah, that's the only terrible thing. Everybody gets to go, and we got to work. But hey, that's the price we pay.
And yeah, but you know, you forgot to ask me what I miss most about Berlin.
Well, I'll ask you that in just a minute. Okay, tell you what, Darren.
Okay.
You know what? We're at that point now in the conversation where I asked that question. And, you know, what is it you miss the most about Berlin?
Two things. I miss Mrs. J's, who had her imbistan right there on post. It was off post for a little while at the back gate, but some knuckleheads caught it on fire and burned it. And she moved it over by the front gate. And that was probably one of the few places a soldier could get credit as long as they paid her back. And she made some of the best half-henchens in the world and always had beer. That's one of the things I miss most. And the other has to do with Andrew's Barracks, because right outside the front gate was a small restaurant and doner kebabs. I would kill for a good doner kebab to this day. I actually found one place here in the area that I work now that had something close, but it just wasn't a doner kebab. So that, those are, I know it's crazy, but I miss the people. I miss my fellow soldiers. I do talk quite a few of them still, but doner kebabs. I miss doner kebabs. I know it's crazy, but I just cannot find that sauce and that kind of food here. And I've tried to replicate it, and I've not even come close.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I miss most.
Oh yeah, certainly. It's that is one of those things that it's often imitated but never replicated.
Oh yeah, I would walk from McNair all the way to Andrews at 2 or 3 in the morning just to go get a couple doner kebabs and walk back.
One for the road and one for the morning.
You got it. I don't care if it was cold, long it was there.
Yep, I remember that too. Yeah, we did that several times. But hey, but that's all right. You know, it builds character.
Now, in Amsterdam, they serve a good shawarma, which is kind of close, but it's on a pita bread, but it's not a doner kebab. And the last really good doner kebab I had was on the Kapustendam in 80 or 96 when I went back and just ran around Berlin for it was probably a day or maybe two at the most while I was back visiting. So I got to take my wife around and show her, you know, my youth, my best spent youth. So that was the last good doner kebab I had. But it wasn't at the places we normally got them because they were gone.
Yeah.
Troops were gone, and so was the doner kebabs, I guess.
Yep. But you know what? They're still there. They're still good. And, you know, it's, you're overdue. You need to go back. So get on the ball, make those millions of dollars, and get yourself a private jet and just hop on over there. And speaking of making the millions of dollars, why don't you tell us what you're doing now? What exactly are you doing?
What am I not doing? You know, I guess you could say I'm a poor entrepreneur. I've owned a security company for about the last 7-8 years, I guess. It's we started it originally in 2000. My business partner did, and then I came in 2004 and helped him take it over. We do a lot of homeland security type contracts here on the Columbia and the Willamette Rivers, and basically, the gist of Pacific River is that, and you can find us on the web, no problem, pacificriver.com, is that the gist of that is we have both armed and unarmed guards at port facilities, making sure that nothing sneaky comes through or anything that would be harmful to our country regarding both the facilities. And we also put armed guards on international ships that come through that have been flagged for any of the various reasons by either customs or U.S. Coast Guard. And what we do is we'll board the ship anywhere between Astoria or after it gets to port, and we will make sure that nothing leaves that ship to include personnel or cargo that's not supposed to, and the entire time that ship is at port. And that's one of the big things we do for that company.
Wow. So taking a little bit of your skills and definitely the leadership that Berlin puts in all of us, and the skills we acquired while we're in Berlin, and you got into entrepreneur. Excellent. That's it. That's backbone of the United States right there. That's what it's all about.
Exactly.
Yeah. So tell me, I mean, you know, you're doing all this ship security and you're dealing with international ships. Obviously, it's an international port because it's smack up against the Pacific Ocean. And the website...
Actually, I have to correct you on that, Dave, but Portland and Vancouver, Portland, Oregon, and Vancouver, Washington, are separated merely by a river. It's the Columbia River. And it's actually about 100 miles inland.
I need to get a better map.
Yes, well, I want to say it's probably about 89 miles, actually. But, yeah, they went through the Columbia River at the port of Astoria, Oregon, which is a small town made famous by both the Goonies and Kindergarten Cop. And the ship will navigate up the waterways all the way up to, well, there's stops all the way up to Portland and Vancouver, but that's usually where their final stop is on the river. And so, yeah, it is an international port. A lot of... railhead service, shipping, comes right out of this area. Big bulk container cargo ships come in. And so it is one of those things where no one would expect it, you know, this far inland we'd have an international port, but there's both one in all sorts of different port facilities up and down the Columbia River all the way through Portland and Vancouver. And Portland's actually situated on both the Columbia River and the Willamette River. Which in the Willamette is, my understanding, one of the few rivers that actually, on this side of the country, that actually flows north instead of west. So that's kind of what we do here.
Wow, pretty cool.
That's just one of the many things I've gotten myself into. and then with our security company at one time, and I couldn't tell you the date or the year offhand, But while working at one of the facilities, I just happened to be filling in for one of my employees that was feeling ill that night. And so I was still working as a liquor cop for the state of Oregon. And then I went and filled in a ship. And I actually had one of the guys on the ship. It's actually an Egyptian ship. I won't say the name of the ship. It's still on the water. But one of their crew members actually was in the process. I actually caught him trying to jump ship and enter the country illegally. And so by my actions that night, which I think any one of my employees would have done, I was able to stop and detain him, stop him the first two attempts. And on his third attempt, I actually ended up having to use a bit of physical force, verbal skill. And I had to... detained him and made him physically put him back on the ship and made sure, you know, Coast Guard, Customs were all made aware of it. And finally, when the sun came back up, they actually came out and investigated it, found that not only he, but several others on the ship were in the process of jumping ship and entering the country illegally. For what purposes, I wasn't privy to, but a few months later, out of the blue, I actually was given they call it a CBP award. And at that time, as far as I understood it at the time, was that I was one of the only civilians ever to get it. So that's one of the little trinkets I have on my wall.
Pretty cool.
Like I said, I was doing what I do. So I think any one of my staff would have done the same thing. So right place, right time, I guess.
Yeah. That's definitely... But you could call it that for sure. And but wow, so even then you're still dealing on a big scale, international issues, international situations, and again you're also dealing with stuff right here at home, and not having to travel across, you know, to another country to deal with it. It's here, it's right here, right where you're at. I've seen the cities on the map. I just never put two and two together that, you know what, they're actually a little bit further inland than what we think. And but that's pretty cool. So really, technically, it's a very porous entry point.
Oh, absolutely. It's you know, it's one of those things that you expect a port facility to be right there on the ocean, but we're actually quite a ways inland. They navigate up some areas of the river that I have no idea how they get a ship that big up the river. I really don't. There's a couple of places where either we're doing an escort with one of our boats or we're actually riding a ship where the ship will come within 10 feet of land. And it's just amazing to see that a ship that big can navigate through a small channel that's, you know, it's actually pretty deep, but it seems narrow, and it's almost like you can jump off the ship straight on the land. So, yeah, it's one of those things that we're very unique up in this area about that. Same with, Seattle. That's good. It's kind of, you have to go through the Puget Sound and work your way into Seattle.
Yeah.
It's ringed by a bunch of good-sized mountains, and we've done work up there. And then now we're coming out with a new company. It's called, we have two new things we're coming out with, and one is called ProtexNet, ProtexNet, net.com. And it's kind of a new venture for us. We're moving into what we think security is going to be doing here in the next several years, and that's where we are actually doing live internet video monitoring. And one of the things that we're doing with that is that we are setting up internet-based cameras at different properties for our clients, where we will be having people monitor it live as if it was in a monitoring a surveillance department in the casino floor. That way it'll save our clients money and give them the same protection that it would be roughly if they had a guard on site. We'll have people actually monitoring the camera systems. And I think one of the things that's going to make us different on this is that we're not waiting for an alarm to be tripped or a motion detector to be triggered. What we're doing is we actually have people sitting all night long in front of a huge bank of video screens, and they're watching. If they see anything that's out of the ordinary or anything that just grabs their interest, they'll bring it down to a screen at their workstation and be able to zoom in, move the cameras, find out what's going on. We even have the ability to do two-way audio where we can actually speak over a PA system in that area to find out what someone's intentions might be. And from there, we can alert both our clients or law enforcement and try to help cut down a little bit on the expense for the businesses. Priced at words, it's pretty much affordable. And we have a great camera manufacturer, and we have all the software, and so that's our newest one of our newest projects. And that one's taken off pretty good right now. So we're still in the startup stages. We're kind of clear of that, and now we're already taking on clients. And then with that system, we've also come up with a new thing called Measure It. And I think that's under our Pacific River, Measure It, Pacific River. I don't have the address handy. And basically that was come about due to safety concerns for one of my friends who works in the as a weigh station operator here in Oregon for the Department of Transportation, where they have to measure the distance between axles on trucks depending on the height and weight of the load. And it takes up a lot of man hours, but it's also kind of be dangerous out there, not on the freeway, but next to the freeway, measuring little axle distances for weight. And so we've come up with that program, and all the software has been designed and programmed, and now we're in the testing phases for that. And then it's ready to go probably in the next week. And so we'll be marketing that to probably different states, Department of Transportation, or anybody who would have a need for a program that would actually, using a camera system, it keeps the safety factor down, where someone can actually measure between two points, calibrate the camera, and they'll be able to put a layover screen over it and be able to do measure within an inch from like 200 feet away what distances between two different locations would be. So that would that way you don't have inspectors out there trying to take measurements of distance between two different axles on semi-trucks right next to the freeway. So we're going to hope that'll eventually pay off. So we have several things that we're working on. We're really good at creating and developing new products, and that's one of the things that me and my business partner have very good strengths on, business plans, getting them up and running. So, but, you know, as they say, it takes money to make money, so we're not millionaires yet, but that is our goal. It would be nice to just be able to take a vacation whenever I wanted, but until that time, I'm just going to be a workhorse and knock that stuff out. And that's kind of what I'm doing today. You know, there's a couple other, fraternities I belong to, and, do some stuff for the community, and that's kind of the stuff I like to do. So not only am I trying to make a living, but I'm also doing everything I can to give back to the communities in which have been so good to me over the last several years.
Wow, that's great, interesting stuff. Man, yeah, I can see that here in Texas, and so I hope you're planning to market to the state of Texas. because I can see the need. I mean, I drive as part of, you know, I'm an entrepreneur as well, small business owner. And so I do a little bit of driving. I've got multiple locations. So I do a lot of driving every week. And what I'm getting at is that I do pass those roadside weigh stations. And, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about, and I see the factor there. The safety factor is just, you know, it's highly risky. You know, vehicles going 65, 70 miles an hour, and then this guy's out there trying to take care of business and do his job that he's signed up to do, and everybody's just zipping on past him. And so, yeah, I understand. And, man, that sounds awesome and really you've got this taxpayer sold on the safety factor.
So absolutely. And, you know, it really came down to is in order to enter those weigh stations, it depends on what state it is, either they're inspectors or officers or, you know, personnel, but they basically have to walk through the same line of path that truck's coming to get into those, their weigh stations. And some are smaller than others. Some are, you know, maybe 15 feet by 25 feet, somewhat relatively small. And they basically have to walk through the path of where that vehicle is. And in almost every one of them, for safety, there's a bypass lane on the other side of the truck. And that was one of the concerns that was brought to us, going, man, I almost got hit by another semi-truck today. Because these semi-drivers, you know, for the most part are safe. But, you know, they're doing a lot of driving. They're on the road. And when they're coming off through a weigh station, you know, they have that false sense of they're, you know, they're slowing down and everything's going to be safe. And if they're going through the bypass lane, you know, they're thinking, you know, they're still technically going through a bypass. And unfortunately, you know, nobody wants to become a hood ornament. So that's one of the things we kind of came up with. And it's a lot of it for us being, you know, from the public safety sector ourselves, being put in some weird situations where it's not as safe as we would like it to be. But we're always trying to look it up and make a buck at the same time. So we try to find a need that's out there in the market and try to figure out a way to fill that need. So that's kind of what we're doing.
Well, that is pretty cool. Well, hey, you got a promise to let us know how this Measure It program is doing, what the progress is. If you're field testing, let us know, because you know what? There's a lot of followers here on BerlinBrigade.com that are in law enforcement and state employees and state government. And, you know, they can say, hey, bring it up to somebody and say, hey, look, this guy's got this great idea. Let's take a look at it. You know, not promising anything, but, you know, again, the more we get the information out to people, the better off it'll be. And the more eyes get to see your product. And just by listening to it, I already see the need, and experiencing what I've seen, I see the need. So, you know, you put those two together and, yeah, you answer a call. And that's a very good thing. So definitely, you got to promise. Let us know how things are going. Definitely send us some updates. I'll update the website. I'll update the blog. I'll update the Facebook. I'll update the Twitter. I'll update I'll update the podcast too, if that's the case. So definitely, you know, just let us know. And folks, if you're listening, we're going to have those addresses on our links page. So again, be on the lookout for those. And by the time you're listening to this podcast, the links have already been up there. So if you've seen them, now you know what we're talking about when those links are there. Again, we're talking to Darren Taylor. He was assigned to 2nd Platoon, Alpha Company, 6th Battalion, 502nd Infantry. Darren, I'm at a point now where I'm going to turn the floor over to you and kind of just give you an opportunity to give a shout out, or kind of if we miss something, definitely go ahead. You know, you got some time. It's up to you. Go ahead and put it out there. And you know what? The floor is yours.
Thanks, Dave. I think I already did my shameless you know, self-promotion there for my companies. Over the last several years, I have to say one of the things I have found to be quite interesting is Facebook. I have no way, shape, or form getting any money from that, but I think Facebook has been a great thing, just mainly because it gives me a chance to reconnect with a lot of guys that I haven't heard from in a number of years, such as yourself. But we reconnected on your webpage for Berlin. And that was several years ago, I think. But, you know, it's been a good chance for me to contact guys I haven't seen in 20 years, actually longer than that now. I'm not getting younger. But Phil Anstein, you know, is a guy I hung out with a little bit in the military and Ernie Coggins and a couple of these other guys. It gives us a chance to touch base, you know. And I think that's a, you know, it's a good social networking thing. I'm kind of, you know, very selective of who I use as friends, but it's been a really neat experience with that, because I think that has been a really good service. I know there's a lot of the veterans web pages that I scan and look through and try to find a couple names I recognize, or finding people where they're at duty stations. But that's one of the things that, you know, I think has been a really good thing. And I'm not trying to promote Facebook, but it's given me the opportunity to find long lost friends and reconnect. So, and just like yesterday, you know, we've been able to text back and forth, yourself and I, on Facebook. So it's kind of a cool little device. And other than that, you know, I'm just out here living in the Pacific Northwest, because San Diego was just too expensive to live in. So I uprooted, but, you know, being, you know, for a lot of people who are in the military, it's not as scary for us maybe to pick up and find new employment and move on to greener pasture, so to speak. But I wouldn't trade living in the Pacific Northwest for anything right now. As much as I grew up in Southern California, stayed there for a number of years after I got out of the military, the opportunities I found up here, and contrary to belief, it doesn't rain every day here. It just feels like it. But, you know, we get 100-degree temperatures during the summer, a little bit muggy. But there was nothing that would get me to leave the Pacific Northwest right now. It's absolutely, the only thing it doesn't have is a desert. But, you know, if you want to drive 4 or 5 hours, there is a desert here in Oregon, believe it or not. But this is the best place to go camping, hunting, and fishing. We have the ocean, we have the mountains, we have skiing, surfing if you have a really good wetsuit. But yeah, I would, if you guys are shooting through this area, get on Facebook, look me up, and absolutely, I'd love to have you stop by, or if I'm out and about traveling, as I do on occasion for business, and then I'm definitely going to be looking up some of my old friends and seeing if I can stop by and say hi to them. Other than that, that's about all I got, Dave.
Alrighty, sounds cool. Thanks a lot, Darren. Listen, everybody, we've been talking today with Darren Taylor, 2nd Platoon, Alpha Company, 6th Battalion, 502nd Infantry, Berlin Brigade. He was there from October of 85 to October of 87. Darren, thank you for taking this time to talk to us, and it was great to talk. And, you know, we'll continue talking. Like Darren said, we were on Facebook the other day. I think what Facebook has done, because Darren, you know, Darren and I exchanged emails a couple of years back, but, you know, our paths just kind of went that way. And then, you know, this Facebook thing just kind of exploded. And now it's like I'm on and he's on and boom, we're chatting. And that makes things a little bit easier. So I think that really facilitates that reconnection. So definitely. And it came time to get him on here. And we were it's great having you here. And thank you for your time, Darren. I appreciate it. And I thank you, sir.
Absolutely. Anything for an injured brother.
Again, I want to give a great big BerlinBrigade.com thank you to my friend Darren Taylor for taking the time to talk to all of us, and I hope you enjoyed the conversation with Darren. It was a lot of fun. Thanks, Darren. Well, the time has come to start wrapping up this episode of the BerlinBrigade.com podcast. As always, I invite you to call and leave a voice message or audio comment on the BerlinBrigade.com hotline at 413-274-4233. Who knows? It might just show up on the next episode. Also, please don't forget, you can always send us the comments, concerns, questions, reunion information, and of course show ideas to dave@berlinbrigade.com. That's Dave, D-A-V-E, at berlinbrigade.com. Also, if you or someone you know has something to share with us, please drop me a note. Again, dave@berlinbrigade.com, and we'll schedule a date and a time for an interview, and before you know it, you're on the show. Hey, before I forget, I invite you to stay up to date with the latest at BerlinBrigade.com by following us on Twitter at www.twitter.com/BerlinBrigade, and Berlin Brigade is all one word. Also, you can do what over 1,500 of our fellow Berlin Brigade veterans, members, supporters, and fans have done, and that is to join us on the BerlinBrigade.com group page on Facebook. And you can do that by following the links on the BerlinBrigade.com homepage. Hey, come on over, join our conversation. It's a lot of fun. And lastly, I want to take a moment to say merci beaucoup, spasiba, thank you, and vielen Dank to all our website visitors. I do hope you've enjoyed your visit to Freedom's Virtual Outpost, and please come back again real soon. We got more stuff coming. Well, everyone, that's it for the 38th edition of the BerlinBrigade.com podcast. I am your host, David Guerra. Thank you for spending this time with me, and I continue our never-ending quest for the key to the clock tower. So if you have it, or know who does, please let us know. No questions asked. Remember, April is National Clock Tower Key Amnesty Month, so get it in. Until next time, Danke, auf Wiedersehen, tschüss.
Sergeant Major, dismiss the brigade! The BerlinBrigade.com podcast is a Dave Guerra production. Thank you.